What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 207 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. You know what? I should have double checked on SoundCloud before I launched right into that opening. I'm pretty sure that it is 207, but I did not. It is indeed 207. Perfect. So I was right. I could have just completely bypassed that entire uncertainty thing and continued on, and nobody would have been the wiser, even if I was wrong. But welcome to episode 207 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We have a fantastic episode for you tonight. Probably going to be a little bit on the shorter side because I have to wake up very, very early to go flying tomorrow morning. I'm taking Friday off. I'm going to be going and spending some time at a fly-in with a couple of buddies of mine, trying to just get out of the house and get out of the city and celebrate now that I finally have a job where I'm not literally on call 24/7. I can actually take time off and not have to worry about work. So I'm going to try to enjoy that and see how it goes. But we do have a ton of information about Guardian Games. Which normally that excites exactly no one, but the changes that they detailed in this week's TWAB are actually they're kind of intriguing to me. I really like some of the stuff that they're doing. They're kind of leaning into the competition. So we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to answer some really, really fantastic questions that were given to us by the denizens of our Discord. So I guess, that being said, let's get the introduction out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. How are you doing this evening, Kit?
Hercules, I am doing pretty darn well. I actually just got back from a 3D, 3D, th a 3-day small town getaway. Rented a cabin in something like the middle of nowhere, and did some small town shopping, and drank some beer, drank some wine, drank some liqueur, drank some liquor. Ate a whole lot of desserts and croissants and stuff that is terrible for me but tastes fantastic. And I'm feeling like ready to come back and deal with the real world. And the real world is not having any of that nonsense and just dumped emails on me. So I haven't played Destiny in a while. Probably 5 days at this point, but I am excited about Guardian Games, which is new.
I'm really only excited about Guardian Games because I'm hoping that some of the changes that they're making, specifically in the way they've adapted some of these playlists, are gonna potentially filter into other parts of the game. I also have not played a ton of Destiny this week. It's actually a bummer. I was really looking forward to Iron Banner because I thought they were keeping the new matchmaking style around, or the new lobby balancing style. And I went in and I played, four games the first night, fell asleep, didn't really notice any significant changes. So I just kind of assumed that the matchmaking was still the same. And I was like ready to go. I was like ready for an Iron Banner week. Went on Twitter the next day and saw that DMG clarified that nope, the lobby balancing is back to the way it was before. And it was like a dagger to the heart. Even though I hadn't noticed anything in the four games I'd played the previous night, it was just like all of my motivation to play Iron Banner just went like straight out the window. And obviously the population is pretty low right now too. Nobody's super excited about these last couple of weeks of the season. So one of the games that I did play, I was like, well, Freelance doesn't have that lobby balancing, then I'll try normal Iron Banner because I found that it's sometimes less sweaty than Freelance. And it was like a five man and two three mans and me, and I was the only solo, and I was like, this sucks. And I was like, okay, well, yeah, it's like maybe not. So I have also not played a ton of Destiny this week, but sometimes it feels good to sometimes it feels good to get away. Sometimes it feels good to take a break.
It does, yeah. I feel like it really refreshes the appetite for Destiny. So let's not get ahead of ourselves though. I want to make sure we take a quick timeout and say some thank yous. And I don't know if we have any reviews this week.
We do. We have two, and one of them was sent to us via Twitter because, and I feel terrible because I saw this guy's message and I thought, oh, that's fantastic. And then I didn't respond to the message, but he'll know who he is because I'm going to say his name right here. It's Tomcat and Socks. Says, hey guys, I listen on Spotify and I wanted to leave a review here. I found your podcast more recently and has instantly been added to my weekly listening rotation. I've also gone back and listened to older episodes as well. Really amazing job breaking down the weapons and giving reviews of content. Also, I'm loving the Star Wars content as well. Thanks, and hope you guys have a great weekend. So thank you very much, Tomcat and Socks. I am sorry that I did not respond to you on Twitter when I saw that message, but I hope that this counts for it instead, because we are responding to it on the podcast. And then we also have a more conventionally left review that is actually on Apple Podcast. This one is from Danny Buzz. He says, one of my favorite podcasts, 5 stars. Discovered you guys pretty recently through my weekly listening of Firing Range, and as an average to above average PvP player who is constantly on the hunt for ways to get better in general, gain a better understanding of guns, mods, perks, archetypes, and how they work, you guys have such a great understanding of the ever-changing sandbox inside this game. It's awesome to hear from people who play a ton of PvP and play on controller. My overnight shifts are much easier listening to you guys. You got another loyal listener. So thank you very much, Danny. We appreciate that. So big shout out to you and Tomcat. We love everyone who takes the time out of their day to leave us reviews wherever it is that they listen to the podcast. Like we've always tried to say, it doesn't matter if you send it to us on Discord or on Twitter or on Reddit. I had one guy send it to me on Xbox Live. Wherever you can send us a review at, we really appreciate that. It means the world to us. And so thank you very much.
Yeah, very much appreciate both those reviews. That's phenomenal. People finding us in some different places, some different ways. It's nice to see the word getting out, and hopefully we can continue to offer some great content and keep these folks coming back and new folks coming in. So speaking of people that we love, let's say thank you to some patrons. So first off, as ever, massive shout out to our sponsor Guardians, ZenSoCal, and the Shazzle. And we are looking forward to welcoming a new sponsor to the fold in May. So you know who you are. And we very much appreciate the exceptional generosity that these Guardians are providing. If you ever wonder why you don't hear any mention of any goops or goos or technical devices or other things that we're trying to get you to buy, it's because we're listener supported. And we love being listener supported. It's kind of the only kind of support that we were really open to when we started doing this podcast. And honestly, we didn't have any kind of support when we started it. It was just us. And then someone said, hey, do you guys have a way to contribute? And we said, nope, we don't. And that's how it started. One Guardian wanted to support the podcast. And here we are. All these years later.
And now we've got, 80 Guardians supporting the podcast? 80, I mean, that's amazing to me.
83, as of today, active Guardians supporting this podcast. That is phenomenal. I can't even... That is literally 83 more Guardians than I would have predicted would contribute to this podcast when we did our first episode. Yeah. It had not even occurred to me that someone would want to help support us continuing to make this content. So, huge thank you. And a special, special thank you this week to Tice, our newest patron. Thank you so much for joining the fold. I hope that you stop by and say hi in the Discord or on PlayStation or Xbox Live or on PC. Wherever you might happen to play, on Stadia even. I haven't signed in on Stadia in a while, I'm going to be honest. But I hear it's the place to play Trials, so who knows? It's in the back of my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, as far as numbers go, I mean, it's pretty neat that we've had, you know, 80-something patrons. We also have a couple of one-time donations that come in through other means. We also appreciate that a lot. I think we have 240 podcast reviews total, which is amazing. And then, you know, everybody supports in different ways. And then the Discord, which we talk about every single week. But guys, the Discord is over 1,000 members strong right now and very, very active, not just for Destiny. Although we do have some fantastic channels in there. We have a whole team of Destiny scientists in there right now. Like, you know, I just sit back and watch and read at this point, and I learned so much from the guys who are in there. I mean, it's crazy. I want to shout out some of their names, but then I'm worried that I'm going to insult someone by not remembering their name, so I'm not going to do it. But the guys in the Destiny Science channel, especially the guys who run their own spreadsheets, like, you know who you are, and I see your work, and it's just incredible stuff. So we've got a role channel where they give recommendations on roles that people post. We have the wonderful Spicy Brews channel where we can just talk about what you're drinking, what you're eating, what you're making. You know, I mean, it's such a tremendous place that, you know, there's hardly anywhere else that I spend my time. When I get on my phone, a lot of times the first thing I do now is I check Discord just to see what's going on in there. So.
Yeah, there's always something cool going on. I do want to shout out on the Destiny Science channel. If you stop in, you look around, it can be a little overwhelming at first because there is a lot going on. But I have, at least in that channel, created a massive pin of D2 Science. So up in the top, at least on desktop, it's up on the top. I guess I don't recall exactly where you find your pins in mobile, but you'll figure it out. If you go to view the pinned messages, I have created a list of spreadsheets, tools, and other information that are kept up to date and that provide just an exceptional level of information on Destiny that I think every Guardian can benefit from checking out. So we've got that up there, and I try to occasionally just check in and make sure I haven't missed any new activity. So yeah, check it out.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's probably enough of the housekeeping. I think we have dilly-dallied enough now, 11 minutes into the podcast, which I guess kind of makes up for the fact that the last few weeks I feel like we've gotten through the housekeeping pretty fast. So it was
We
about time
have.
that we took our sweet time on one of them. But I will never say that time spent thanking our supporters is time wasted. So regardless, this week at Bungie, the TWAB, April 15th, 2021, pretty much the only real stuff. I was kind of hoping that we were going to get a breakdown of the buffs since they did the nerfs last week, but I guess they're saving that for next week. But instead, what we got was Guardian Games, which, you know, I think last year had a little bit of novelty to it, but kind of in actual execution ended up being a little on the bland side, ended up not really motivating a ton of players to play. I know it certainly didn't motivate me to play a ton, which is unfortunate. So.
Yeah, I guess I would say I pretty much just did what I was going to do anyway for
Right.
Guardian Games last year, which, it was fine. I didn't dislike it. But it definitely left me not thinking about it, not
Yeah,
looking forward to it coming back.
it was really no different of a week for me in Destiny, other than just like some other additional stuff dropped and I had to wear a different class item, and like that was kind of just it.
Yeah.
It was really just a little bit underwhelming. So this year they are really trying to shake things up. One of the ways they're going to do that is they are not going to do the same type of modifier that they did last year, where they basically modified people's scores based on the population of a class, right? So hunters were the most populous class, therefore they had basically a negative modifier. And what it did was it kind of leveled things out. But what ended up happening is like the Titans just dominated pretty much every single day, and there was really just I mean, that was it. And it wasn't ever really competitive at any point in time. The Titans
Yeah.
took such a huge lead. So this year they are not putting a modifier in people's scores, but what they're doing is the team that comes in last place will get a permanent 10% buff to their scores indefinitely for the rest of the games. So basically, if you start out with a huge lead, you will then be giving, you know, fuel to the fire of your opponents by giving them 10% buffs for every day that they come in last place. So there's a little bit of strategy there. They said they ran the numbers with last year's numbers and a couple of different data sets, and they thought it made for a more variable and more close competition than what happened last year. So that's interesting. That's actually the thing I'm kind of least interested about. I actually really don't care about that. What I like seeing is that they're bringing in a Guardian Games strike playlist, which is a strike playlist, but it matches you based on your class. So if you're a hunter, it will match you with other hunters. If you're a warlock, it will match you with other warlocks. Titans will go with Titans. To me, that's a neat idea.
Yeah.
And for strikes, it's one thing, but like, good Lord, could you imagine a Crucible playlist matched based on classes? Or this was something people asked for a lot in D1, but based on factions, where it was like, you should match people into PvP matches based off their faction and make it actual faction wars. So I don't think we've seen a matchmaking modifier like this before. And I'm really interested to see if they use this more in the future.
This is definitely something new. And I would very, very much love to see a Faction Wars Crucible event down the road based on this type of matchmaking where you're locked in for each character, right? So maybe you could end up playing for all three, but you can only do one for any given character for the duration of the event. Now, naturally, of course, I would be Future War Cult on all characters, but hey, that would be super cool, and it would feel, I think, very exciting. I think it would feel like you're kind of contributing to something larger, and I think that's what they're going for here, is trying to make it feel like a little bit more than just something that's going on in the background. Trying to give you that feeling of being part of a larger destiny.
It makes it feel more, I don't know about that. I feel like that deserves a boo, but it makes it feel more like your class is significant, yeah. Right? Like, it makes it feel more like a competition against other classes, as opposed to last year, it was each person just kind of did their own thing, and if enough people of your class did their own thing, then it worked out better for you. Now it actually feels like I'm cooperating with other hunters. I'm cooperating. Well, for me, it'll be hunters because that's what I'm going to be playing on. But like, that's what it feels like, right? I really exactly. like that. And then the second thing that they're doing is they're actually adding positive and negative modifiers to the playlist based on how well your class did the previous day. So for example, if your class came in first the previous day, which means you got a gold medal, health, shields, and recovery are all increased, and your kinetic weapons deal more damage. If you came in second, you got a silver medal, your melee abilities recharge faster, and elemental damage is increased from guardian sources, plus more heavy ammo is available. If you came in last, then grenade abilities deal more damage and recharge much faster, and elemental damage is increased from guardian sources. So it is not just a case of the rich get richer. If you came in first, you will also get negative modifiers, in some cases it says strong negative modifiers attributed to you, right? So say, for example, you came in first and you're a hunter, the next day when you go into the playlist, your radar is going to be disabled and combatants won't flinch when you deal damage to them. If you are a warlock and you came in first, incoming damage is significantly increased while you're airborne. And if you were a titan and you came in first, then combatant melee attacks deal significantly more damage. If you came in second, then you get a version of that that's like scaled down, right? So for titans, combat melee damage is just increased. Warlocks just take a little bit more damage when they're airborne. And for hunters, radar is just disabled, right? So it's kind of a neat little thing. It's like, okay, cool. Like, you get rewarded for doing well. But at the same time, like, we're going to make things a little bit harder for you because you did well. And we're going to make things a little bit easier for the guys that didn't do well. And basically try to, you know, give a, like a rubber banding or like a catch-up mechanic to the guys that are lagging behind, which will, of course, be warlocks.
It's harsh. That's harsh judgment right there.
But do you deny that it's probably true? Like, hunters have numbers on their side, and titans, you know, are unstoppable objects. And the warlocks just, last year in particular, just really couldn't seem to be bothered to do anything.
I don't know. They're... Hunters, despite numbers, get lazy over time. I have to say.
But 100 lazy hunters is going to do more than, you know, 50 moderately motivated warlocks.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. So I think that this is some really exciting game design, is honestly what I think. Seeing both these positive and negative modifiers and the way that they have focused them, to where I think you're truly going to feel rewarded for getting that gold medal, but also challenged to keep kicking butt. And definitely, if you have fallen behind, you're gonna get what Lord Shaxx knows that we all need, right? More grenades, or more melees if you're just a little bit behind. So I feel like this is just some very, very clever game design in terms of the way the catch-up mechanics work and the way that the increased challenge works. I like that it cycles based on which class is in which position. I'm very much looking forward to playing with combatant melee attacks, dealing loads of extra damage and lots of incoming damage while airborne being increased. Don't get punched out of the air, I guess, is the thing if you're a hunter and you get a gold medal. But credit to other classes. They certainly have a chance to compete here. And that radar being disabled is going to be a very interesting challenge for them to deal with if they do manage to surpass the hunters. Honestly, I kind of feel like that's a little bit of a hunter advantage. I feel like that's the most annoying of those benefits. But, you know, opinions may vary. I don't get hit very much, and I tend to stay grounded in strikes. So this pretty much plays to my normal playstyle.
So if I'm reading this correctly, and I may not have been, so if you're gold, you get the two, so you're hunter, you're gold, you get the debuffs from the Titan and Warlock classes. Is that how that's working?
That's correct. You get the debuffs from the class below you.
Oh.
So
wait, from the class immediately below you. Well, so from if you're all, gold, you get from silver.
From all or classes from below you.
From both of them, okay.
So let's run with the example. Let's just for argument's sake, let's say that warlocks are in gold, hunters are at silver, and titans just don't show up for some reason and they're in bronze. They got the directions wrong. I don't know. So the way it would work then, the warlocks are in gold. So they are going to get the debuffs from hunters in silver, and the hunter silver debuff is radar disabled and combatants don't flinch when damaged. And they're going to get the debuff from titans. Combatant melee attacks deal more damage. So the kind of the primary debuff comes from the one directly below you, and then, or from the silver one, and then the bronze gives a smaller debuff. So then hunters with in second place are going to get the debuff from Titan only. So combatant melee attacks deal more damage. Titans, meanwhile, get no debuffs at all. They just get loads of extra grenades and bonus elemental damage. So bronze, while obviously a bad position to be playing out of because you're in last place, is a much easier position to run this playlist from.
So now that you have explained that to me, I don't know how I was reading it the first time. I was not reading it like that. I was thinking that I honestly don't know how I was reading it, because now that you have explained it to me that way, it makes perfect sense. And I'm trying to remember how I thought it was going to work literally 3 minutes ago, and I cannot understand how I ever thought it was going to work any way differently. For some reason, I thought it was going to like assign you debuffs based on what your position was in. So like if you were hunter and you got gold, I guess I thought you were going to get the hunter bronze and silver debuffs, right? Where, you know, whereas if you got bronze, you were going to get nothing. And if you got silver, you're just going to get the bronze one. Like, I guess that's what I thought it was going to happen, but your way makes a lot more sense and also is a much better way of doing it, because I like this way a lot more.
The reason I'm convinced this is the way it's going to work is that it says, so the gold class gets two modifiers and the silver class gets one. These modifiers are themed around the classes that finish lower on the podium. So you wouldn't get the debuffs from your own class, which makes sense because the debuffs from your own class would conflict with each other, right? So you can't have Hunter's radar disabled twice. That just doesn't make sense. So instead, you get the Warlock Silver debuff and the Titan Bronze debuff. Or, you know, say Titans are in gold right? Warlocks are in silver and hunters in bronze. Then the Titans are going to be facing incoming damage, significantly increased while airborne, and their radar will be disabled.
You know, that's a much, much better strategy. I'm actually more, I was like not overly thrilled with my incorrect assumption as to how this was going to work. I was kind of like, oh, that's neat. Like, I really don't care. I like this idea much better. I think it's going to be much more fun. I am more excited about it now than I was before. And I guess I got to blame it on me being tired or something. Cause I, now that I'm looking at it again, I honestly don't know how I ever read it as anything different than that. I think that you are 100% correct. I'm just going to chalk it up to being tired, but that I'm glad that you went over that. Cause you were like giving that first example and I was like listening to it and I was like, what? I was like, that's not, and I like went back and I read it again and I was like, huh, I don't think I understood. I don't think I understood how this is working at all. Okay.
Well, you know, if you were confused, there's probably some other folks out there that were confused by it as well. So you know, hopefully I was able to help clear that up. They didn't explain it. This feels like something where they should have given an example.
This happens all the time. They all don't give the examples. Time in the TWAB. No, they constantly use like the most... And in this case, I think I just read it wrong. But a lot of times, especially when they're talking about sandbox changes, they use the vaguest, most generic wording ever. And it leaves so much up to speculation in terms of what changes they're doing. So that is a problem that they've had in the past. I believe this was a problem for me. Hopefully there were some other people out there who also were maybe a little bit confused by it and your explanation helped them. But the rest of it that they're going to be going over is pretty darn simple. You get a metal case so you can show off your medals now, which is neat. There's a contender card, which contender cards will basically, it's just a new way of earning points. You can have one at a time. You can do them in Strikes, Crucible, Gambit, and they complete a gold, or they grant a gold medal upon completion. But there's also a platinum contender card, which focuses on completing objectives in Nightfalls, competitive PvP, and trials. And it's the only way to earn platinum medals. So basically in-game content for PvE and PvP, although weirdly not raids. At least it doesn't say anything about raids.
It does not mention raids, which is somewhat surprising. I expected them to either include raids or like legendary lost sectors on the PvE side of things.
I would have thought so too, so it wasn't just Nightfalls, but
it's just Nightfalls.
Well, it is what it is. And you get platinum medals, and the platinum medals get you an all-star status and a special reward at the next podium ceremony. And they said that they're also going to be doing a podium ceremony every weekend. It's a special ceremony, and you basically get a glow on your class item depending on your class's standing that week. So third place gets a bronze glow, second place gets a silver glow, first place gets a gold glow, and all-stars will receive a platinum glow. And there's going to be a special closing ceremony from May 7th to 11th. So correct me if I'm wrong, but that podium ceremony is just an entirely new thing. And I'm sure that given that this is a free event, it's not going to be anything spectacular. But hey, you know, giving people a glow to show off is something for bragging rights.
Yeah, that is completely new and pretty neat. You know, they're trying to bring some more kind of live events into the game. I don't know that this is one that I'm particularly excited about, but you know, if I get a gold or a platinum glow, maybe I'll change my tune. I don't know.
Yeah, at least they're bringing Heir Apparent back, which is nice. That's the exotic heavy machine gun from last time, the one that basically you can start spinning it up, and you can't sprint while you're spinning it up, obviously. And once it starts spinning up, it fires, and you get a little shield around you that tanks some damage. And it's actually kind of a neat little gun. You don't see it a ton in any content as far as I'm aware, but maybe it's the secret recipe to beating some of these harder Grandmaster Nightfalls.
Could be. Certainly, I think we'll be seeing a lot of folks playing with it over the next few weeks, if nothing else, just to try to get their catalysts taken care of. So I suppose I probably will have to make a new one. I think I sharded it, so...
I never even got it the last time. I could not be bothered to even put in the effort to do it. The thing I think probably most people are actually most excited about is that this armor, which historically they've done a very good job of making the armor look attractive, but they've done a horrible job of making the armor take shaders. And they basically have gone out of their way to say, hey, we specifically designed this armor to take shaders well, even with all the different colored glows and stuff like that. And then they give some examples down below, and it does in fact look like it takes shaders a lot better than some of the special event armor that we've had in the past. And TWAB's a TWAB. I mean, that's pretty much it. They come in at the end with a, sneaking under the finish line with, hey, also vote for your three exotic weapons that you want to see have more ornaments. And there's a neat little list down there. So I myself voted for Le Monarch, Merciless, and Vigilance Wing. I believe, what did you vote for? You voted for.
So I voted for Crimson, Risk Runner, and then Skyburner's Oath, just because I really wanted that gun to have some love this season, and it just did not shine the way that I hoped that it might.
And the other options were Fighting Lion, Graviton Lance, Sunshot, Sweet Business, Telesto, and Trinity Ghoul. So definitely go and take a vote for that. They also ask you to say what your favorite class was and what your favorite current weapon is too, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, what'd you pick for a favorite weapon?
Dead Man's Tale.
I figured it was either that or Bastion. Toss up.
It's Dead Man's Tale for right now. I am 100% believing, as people have probably seen me going off on Twitter about it recently. The PC players are in such a tizzy over Dead Man's Tale, which I entirely understand why. It's a whole different beast on PC than it is on console. But they are basically freaking out about it, and I believe that there is going to be an inevitable Dead Man's Tale nerf coming down. Probably it's going to kill the rate of fire and hip fire or something like that. And it's if they don't do it correctly and they make a universal change to it, it will basically make it useless on console, where right now it's like barely cracking into the top 10, and mostly only cracking into the top 10 and like trials. So it's not a tremendously highly used weapon compared to some of the other really strong primaries that are out there. So I would be very upset to see that happen to it, but I have a feeling it's coming down the road, and once it does, your boy's gonna be right back on Bastion.
Well, fair enough. I went with the gun that I have been preaching for months, Duality. I don't think there's anything I can say about it that I haven't said 1,000 times. They keep giving it love, either directly or indirectly, and I think it's only going to get stronger in the near future. I would certainly think in the next season or two, it's going to be, as far as shotguns go, a very strong choice, with the major downside simply being that it's an exotic.
If Dead Man's Tale does get nerfed, and Bastion also gets nerfed, which we already know that they're gonna take Bastion down just a little bit, I've still got Symmetry, right? Like,
Yeah,
I don't think
symmetries.
there's any chance of them nerfing Symmetry, right? Like, there's, I God, I would hope not. Like, there's nobody's complaining about Symmetry right now, right? Although they did ban it from sweats a while back, I heard, which is hilarious, but.
Oh man. Well, let's not go down that rabbit hole. We don't need any flame wars on the podcast feed.
No, the sweats don't listen to this podcast anyway, so I think we're pretty safe from that. And I blocked a lot of them off my Twitter too. It turns out if you're like 15 and you have an anime picture, there's like a 75% chance you're gonna get blocked off my Twitter feed. So yeah. Regardless, the only other thing that I want to say about the TWAB is if you guys have not watched the Man with Two Rifles montage from LEGO The Flash, it is a fantastic, fantastic movie of the week winner. He does some really crazy stuff in Trials, where basically he uses two special weapons, a sniper and a fusion, and he's an incredibly skilled player and very, very good at it. And fusion rifles gotta stand together, or fusion rifle users gotta stand together. So I respect the heck out of that. And not only that, but just the montage itself is actually a fantastic montage. Has a they had a guy come in and actually do a voice that sounds just like Saladin, and basically like narrate the montage, and it's just super chill editing, really cool laid back music, like a very, very enjoyable like 4 minutes if you've got time to watch it. So
I will have to check that out just as soon as we finish recording this episode. I have
it's
not had time
well
to
worth
watch
it.
it yet, but I am looking forward to it.
Well, we are only at 35 minutes. I didn't post anything on Twitter, so I apologize if you guys only follow on Twitter, but this is the benefits of being in the Discord. I reached out to the Discord, said, do you guys have any questions you would like us to answer, and got a handful of pretty great questions. So if you don't have anything else you'd like to talk about in terms of Guardian games, I think we can probably just hop right into the community questions.
Yeah, I think that is the thing to do right now. Let's do some questions. What's up first here?
Let's take a question from a solitary bird. And he says, how far would a general grenade buff, either damage, duration, etc., go to bringing light subclasses up to par? And I thought, you know, that is a super interesting question. I actually sent you a ability damage spreadsheet that I have done that compares the D2 damage of grenades to the D1 damage of grenades. And what you guys got to understand, this is something I said a lot on Fire Range. I don't know that I've talked about it a ton on this podcast recently, but everything across the board, almost everything across the board in Destiny 2 is weaker than it was in Destiny 1, except for supers, which are much, much stronger. And it's a really big sticking point to me because I personally don't like that. There are certain things that I think should be as lethal as they were in D1, but potentially harder to use, like sticky grenades. But this is a great question because it taps right into that and it gives me a chance to talk about some of the numbers. So let's say there's 20 grenades basically that were present in D1 that are also present in D2 in some form. Some of those have been relatively heavily modified, like the scatter grenade basically functions very differently than it did in D2. And other ones like the lightning grenade were heavily changed in terms of the way they worked. But on the whole, out of these 20 grenades, three of them actually got buffs from D1 to D2. Suppressor does 10 more damage. Thermite does about 17 more damage. And then Lightning does actually significantly more damage, but it doesn't have that initial shock that it used to have in D1, where you would throw it in the second it would stick to something, it would shock and it would do a ton of damage.
Yeah.
And the time between shocks is also a little bit slower, right? So it does significantly more damage, but at a much slower pace, right?
Yeah, that was really what used to make lightning grenades so strong, is that once you got hit, you had to react immediately to get out of there.
And you basically couldn't, because it did like 90 damage on a hit. And basically it hit immediately, and then it was like half a second or a second later, and then it hit a second, or maybe like a second and a half later, and then it hit a second time.
But you could. But you had to respond immediately. If you stopped and thought about
it, was like a dust field grenade.
Then you were done.
It was like an old dust field grenade.
Yeah.
When if you didn't immediately get out, you were frozen. The difference with lightning grenades was that it killed you, right? So that being said, there's also three that basically were unchanged in terms of damage. Vortex grenades are pretty much unchanged. Flashbang grenades, pretty much unchanged. Scatter grenades, damage-wise, are unchanged, but obviously the way the scatter burst happens is very different. In my opinion, it's worse. But as far as that, so that's six grenades, right? The other 14 grenades all have varied from as low as a 1% nerf, which is the Hunter Spike grenades or the Titan Spike grenades. They did 200 damage back in D1. They do 199 damage in D2. All the way down to a 39% damage nerf, which was the fusion grenades, which used to do 249 damage, and in D2 they do 152, right? So there are 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There are 9 out of 20 grenades that had a 14% or higher damage nerf coming into D1. So the question that a solitary bird asks is, how would a general grenade buff go to bring the light subclasses up to par? Well, what I would say is that it would really just bring them back up to grenade strength wise where they were in D1. And as far as the whole overall sandbox goes, I don't think that would be nearly enough to bring the light subclasses up to par. I think it would almost go so far as that I would say that that's just a quality of life update. Like, it's just something that needs to happen.
As far as the grenades go, I don't know for. I don't feel like these stasis grenades are at this point that far ahead of the light grenades. I don't think that's the main area where the light subclasses are lagging behind. I think it's much more in super effectiveness. In some cases, melee ease of use and effectiveness, and kind of the general neutral game kit, depending on which classes we're talking about. That said, I would love to see grenades come up in their usefulness, because fully two-thirds of these grenades probably see almost no play in a PvP sandbox. And that seems like a lot for them to see probably no one who isn't brand new using them. Is there always going to be a, you know, maybe, you know, 3 to 6 dominant grenades that most people prefer? Absolutely. But what's happened is that there's not even really room for niche choices to be successful, because so many of these grenades have been brought so far down. And even the things that support them have gone so far down in their effectiveness in terms of the exotics that help various grenades be more effective. Those exotics are either mandatory for the grenade to be a choice that you can make, or the exotic is worthless. And it's just kind of a huge bummer that it's basically both exotic armors and grenades just being kind of meaningless. Solidly, I'd say even probably solidly half of these probably don't see hardly any play in PvE. And there's kind of a big crossover, I think, between those two groups, which says to me that there's a lot of room for these to come up. I'd like to see some of that come up in terms of damage and kind of their direct effectiveness, but I'd really love to see Bungie take a step back and decide how they want to mechanically represent each element the way that they did with stasis. Because a lot of these grenades, even though, you know, they might have a different visual representation, feel a little bit samey. And that there's a lot of that kind of coming over from Destiny 1 when it was earlier technology. They were still figuring out what Destiny was going to be when some of these things were originally designed. And there haven't been major changes to most of them. So I'd really love to see them almost, you know, kind of come from the ground up on a lot of these and really figure out, okay, what is going to be the representation? Like, does every class need a grenade that just, like, does area of effect in a half sphere on the ground? Probably not. But every class basically has that, right? Or at least has pulse. Which is, you know, a slight variation, but then isn't really that different from a lightning grenade.
Well, Arc's got Pulse, then Void's got Vortex,
right.
Then Solar's got Sunspot, right? It's all the same grenade, just the effect is slightly different. I mean, when you actually look at it, like, there are four, like, main types of grenades, maybe five main types of grenades, and it's a spike grenade, which is spike, lightning, trip mine, you know? And then there's, like, a frag grenade, which is incendiary, flashbang, suppressor. And then it's the, you know, sphere grenade, which is Duskfield, Vortex, Sunspot, and, or Solar Grenade, I guess is what it's called. And I got Pulse, right? Like, these grenades are the same type. And then there's now the line grenade, which is Storm Grenade, which comes straight down, Thermite Grenade, which goes straight forward, and Void Wall Grenade, which goes straight sideways, right? Like, they... There wasn't a whole ton of creativity here. Like, they came up with one idea for a grenade, and then they, like, how can we make it slightly different for each class?
And I'm not, like, totally opposed to that. Like, those slight variations do matter in terms of the way that we use these grenades, or don't, in some cases. But what I feel like there's a complete lack of is theming. And stasis is very strongly themed, while the grenades themselves are not necessarily on an equal playing field.
Well, Solar's right? The easiest theme ever. Just, it's DOT, right? You just light someone on fire at DOT's. Arc, they've done stuff with it before, like the Electrify effect, where it debuffs you, where you like take more damage when you're electrified. I mean, that's a fun debuff. Void, they kind of screwed themselves because it was like suppression and stuff like that, right? And like darkness, and they gave a lot of that to Stasis with the slow abilities.
Yeah, they made slow a little too close to suppression.
Also, I just thought about this. So, scatter, skip, swarm.
Yeah.
One type of grenade. And then the last one, right, is Axiom Bolt, Arc Bolt, and then Firebolt. Although Axiom Bolt's like a very different one, but Arc Bolt and Firebolt and Cold Snap are like the same grenade.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
Yeah, it is a little funny to see those patterns. But just in terms of the effect, right? So stasis grenades, by and large, aren't lethal. I mean, they aren't. They literally aren't directly, except for Glacier, if you use another ability to smash it. And someone is close enough that the smashing takes them out. And I think that is phenomenal, that they've given us a way to do something other than kill someone. And I'd like to see them explore that further with the light subclasses, where, you know, right now it's basically just all variations on lethality, which is fine. But like I said, now that Stasis is here, it just feels very samey to me. You know, it feels like the, I don't know. I don't know what I can say about it that isn't very disparaging. It's the unlucky older brother.
And, you know, just the long and short of it is like just flat buff to grenades without some type of mechanical change is like it's just needed. Like, that's just quality of life because, you know, you look at the melee abilities too. Like, the base melee abilities are between 20 and 33% weaker. This is just the base melee abilities are between 20 and 33% weaker than they were in D1 too. Like, and again, so are primary weapons. But yet we have supers out here lasting 30 seconds and netting 7 kills and stuff. So it's, you know, stuff like that just doesn't sit right with me. But I don't want to belabor that point for another 10 minutes or anything. So we'll move on to another question.
Yeah, we can totally do a whole podcast about that.
Yeah, we got Super Say. He says, do you think that the Guardian Games class-based subclass play this is a good idea? Or do you think it's innately bad due to class imbalance? So I personally think, as long as the population can support it, it's a really fun idea for PvE. I think that for PvP, you would need some really, really heavy motivation for the subclasses that are potentially underrepresented. Because what you will end up with is like a version of Trials, where it's just three Revenant Hunters on one team, or like three Chaos Reach Warlocks on one team, and like it will be very not fun, right? Like my thing that I've said for a long time is that if you stack a fire team with the same of anything, it literally doesn't matter what it is, it's annoying as shit to play against, right? Like, variety is part of the spice of life, and you could play against three sweet business titans and it's gonna be annoying as shit to play against that, right? Like, it's three of anything is annoying to play against. So for PvE and for strikes, yes. For PvP, I don't think class-based is the way to go. I think faction-based would be fantastic because you'll still get a solid variety, but it allows you to feel like your team matters. So that's just my two cents there.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that answer. It can only be in PvE if it's class-based.
Next up, we got Pansacool said, what would it take for bows to be the meta pick in Crucible? I personally am of the belief that the only way bows will ever be meta is if they introduce a special weapon bow that can one-shot to the head by base. I think if they do that, and that's a dangerous game to play because, you know, it's got to be perfectly drawn. Otherwise, you'll have people sitting there with a drawn bow. But even if it is perfectly drawn, now Oathkeepers are suddenly the best option, and Hunters can do it and no one else can, right? Like, you know, even right now, Hunters with Lamonarch, if they're good, are extraordinarily difficult to play against. So, I mean, bows are one of the things that I honestly think if it were meta would not be a fun meta. Like, it's like grenade launchers. Like, grenade launchers, the things you can do with them just kind of bend the rules of what Destiny Sandbox is expected, how it's expected to perform. And so I think that the way bows would be meta is if there was a way that you could, even if it was extremely ammo limited, one shot to the head without needing a buff. I think that would kick them into, you know, kick them into being pretty popular pretty quick, but I would not necessarily want to see that unless it was heavily limited some other way.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In terms of mechanical changes or other weapons getting nerfed, I think it would take like the game being reduced to other guns being white weapons.
Yeah, your only options are swords and bows, and then bows would be meta.
Yeah. You know, a medieval playlist could be interesting where we just need a few more choices and we can get there. Maybe not a playlist, but a medieval tournament, swords and bows only.
Yeah. Next up, Hiso says, how would you like linear fusion rifles to be buffed? How do you see Bungie actually buffing them? I see them buffing them the kind of laziest way possible, which is just making them do more damage in PvE. And like that then makes them meta for PvE DPS and they'll see more usage. What I would like to see them is I'd like to see their aim assist basically taken down dramatically. And I want to see them move to special weapons. Like the only time a linear fusion should be a heavy is if it's like sleeper where it can kill to the body. Like other than that, if it can't kill to the body, then it's no better than a sniper. And in fact, it's worse because they're charge rate and you need to move them to special weapons like Arbalest is, which Arbalest, now that it has that aim assist nerf, not nearly as prevalent because that's really all that it needed. Like it just needed an aim assist nerf. Every gun in the game needs an aim assist nerf really, but linear fusions in particular.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, just make them special. That's a huge buff.
We are going to do two more questions. Gilded Cavalier says, the difference between Sandbox on console and PC is becoming more and more apparent. How do you think Bungie will handle the fact that they have two relatively different sandboxes that they need to balance? I will say that there is one change, which would almost immediately make the sandboxes, make the complaints that people are having on mouse and keyboard tone down a notch, and that's they need to remove 100% of bullet magnetism from mouse and keyboard. It needs to go away entirely. Because what is happening right now is that things like Dead Man's Tail on mouse and keyboard are getting all the benefits of insane range and fast TTK and ability to two-tap, and they are not requiring the pinpoint accuracy that you would expect from a mouse and keyboard weapon because they have bullet magnetism, because they have aim assist. And so it's making things like Dead Man's Tail the best of all worlds, where it's extraordinarily forgiving because you don't have to be pinpoint accurate and you can still get the fast DTK, the high chip damage, everything like that, the long range. On controller, it's not the same because the aim assist cone at hipfire is so ridiculously wonky that it's much, much more difficult to use accurately. But what I think a lot of the issues that people have on mouse and keyboard are saying, oh, these guns are too easy to use outside of what you would consider to be like their, you know, their how they should be used. DMT in particular, right? Like DMT, you should not be easily three tapping at 60 meters hip firing. You can't really do that on controller. You can on mouse and keyboard because you don't have any damage fall off and you've got a shit ton of bullet magnetism helping you out. So even if you're clicking around their heads, you're still hitting headshots. And it's just, I 100% believe that if they were to remove 100% of bullet magnetism from mouse and keyboard, the amount of differentiated complaints that we're seeing would decrease. Not would go away, but would decrease.
As far as how they will handle it, I think what is most likely to happen is that they will nerf specific weapons for mouse and keyboard. I think that's probably the direction things are going to go. The direction I fear things will go is that they will nerf specific weapons for everybody. I'm hoping that we're in a new era where they're a little more nuanced than that. I am not hopeful that they are going to go as far as you would like to see them go. Not that they're not smart and capable and totally likely to come up with that solution, I just don't see that this being the solution that gains traction.
Well, you know, in the past, it has been stuff gets nerfed on mouse and keyboard because it's too powerful on controller. Lunas Howl, Not Forgotten is one of those things. Arbalest is another one of those things. My fear is that Dead Man's Tale is the beginning of a swap in the opposite direction. The mouse and keyboard players are, this is completely hyperbolic, but I'm going to say it, they make up a large percentage of the vocal Destiny PvP population. They are a very small percent of the population overall. So, number one, Steam makes up less than a third of the total Destiny player base. Out of the players who play on Steam, a minority of those players play mouse and keyboard. The majority of players who play on Steam play controller. That means that at best, mouse and keyboard players make up 15% of the population. But the amount of complaints that I hear from mouse and keyboard players about various things far, far, far outweighs the amount of complaints I hear from the controller portion of the population. So the fact of the matter is that if you have to err one way, and the way in which you err is balance for controller, and if it hurts it on mouse and keyboard, then so be it. That is the smarter way to err. Because you're probably going to make 85% of the population happy and 15% of the population unhappy. The worst thing you can do is balance for mouse and keyboard at the expense of controller players. But if you listen to Twitter, and you listen to a lot of the people freaking out on Twitter, you would think it's the other way around. You would think that if something is an issue on mouse and keyboard, it needs to be destroyed and wiped off the face of the earth.
I do want to say, I think that they have been pretty vocal about using analytics in terms of like how much people are doing things to help guide decisions alongside player feedback. I would hope, of course, that they recognize that players who are saying nothing but still playing are happy with the way things are, and that silence should be heard just as loudly as the people who are unhappy. So my hope is that they will recognize that this is a loud complaint coming from a small number of people. Not that I don't have empathy for those players, certainly. They're in a frustrating situation, and I'd love to see it resolved just in a way that, you know, doesn't wreck a gun that that I enjoy playing with on occasion. I think Bungie has a good track record recently in terms of the way that they've handled guns when they actually nerf them. I'm not always thrilled at the guns that they choose to nerf, but, you know, reasonable minds can disagree. So I think we had one more quick question.
What is the most needed? This is from, I don't know how to pronounce this, Pyrrhus? Pyrrhus 101. He says, what is the most needed buff for an exotic to make it competitive in the current PvP sandbox? That's a very broad question, my friend. There are a lot of exotics that could use buffs to be competitive in the current PvP sandbox. If you had to pick just one, that's hard. I'm going to have to think for a second. Do you have something off the top of your head that you're ready to go with? Because I might need a minute to really consider.
Most needed? I don't know if there is one that I would call needed.
Yeah, because that's hard, right? Because, like, you never need to bring anything into the competitive PvP sandbox. Like, you never need to. What I would like to see is exotic scouts, the high-impact ones, Polaris Lance and Jade Rabbit. I would like to see those brought up. I think the only thing they need is they just need to do more body shot damage. I mean, I that's not even a specific buff to an exotic. I think the entire archetype could use that. But I think that'd be great. I think you'd see a lot more Jade Rabbit. I think you'd see a lot more Polaris Lance, especially with DMT kind of keying people in on the fact that a 0.8 second time to kill with three crits is not only achievable, but pretty darn good. And they're the only guns in the sandbox that can really outrange 120s in the current meta. So,
yeah, that's fair. Honestly, I don't know that there is a specific exotic that I would like to see buffed to become meta. Most of them, I think, would be, if they were truly meta, would be pretty annoying. That's the difficulty for exotics, is any exotic that does anything interesting just really can't be good in PvP.
Yeah, like, imagine if Crimson was able to two-tap instead of needing one shot from that third burst. Like, imagine how incredibly frustrating. Crimson's annoying to play against now on console, and it's not it's not even as good as it could be. Like, yeah. You know, imagine if Crimson actually was. So, yeah, I mean, that's a slippery slope, my friend. So I'm not entirely sure how to answer that. Maybe it's time for another exotic episode where we talk about every exotic and how we would change the balance, but we'll have to wait and see what news we get in the TWAPs next week.
Oh, boy, actually, I just thought of one, and I'm drawing a blank on the name. Go into my Lumina. There's an exotic I would love to see buffed. As far as what has to happen to make it good in PvP, I'm not sure that I have a clear answer on that, but I would love to see Lumina brought up.
Yeah, that's quite the rabbit hole that you've sent us on. So regardless, we are now somehow miraculously over an hour for this podcast, which is amazing because I feel like we've spent 30 minutes just answering listener questions. So I think it is time to call it a night because it is midnight my time. I have to edit this podcast, get it out, and then wake up at, you know, an ungodly hour to prep for my flight tomorrow. So I'm going to say that we call it here.
I think that's fair. Well, this has been a fantastic episode.
All right, Guardians. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Peace.